Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Patriot Nation Podcast.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Patriot Nation Podcast. It's your boy Pat Lane here, as always, with my guy Matt St. Jean. And as with every episode, this episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, which is the official daily fantasy sports app of CLNS. You got to go to download the app today and put in the promo code CLNS, and they will match your first deposit up to $100 100%. And it's the best deal in town with the Final Four going on right now. Everyone's bracket's busted already, probably. And so get out there and do some of these. And it just makes it so much more fun, I think, when you get some of those daily fantasy things going instead. So, Matt, here we are during the owners' meetings. We have a Gerard Mayo sipping orange juice meme already. I love it. I absolutely love it. It had to have been intentional. Had to have been intentional on Mayo's part. It. And I'm excited. I'm genuinely excited about where we're going.
Yeah, no, it's, I think what's interesting too is, I think there was a change in tone in some of the quotes we got with this, the NFL owners meeting, which we will get into it. But, I think it's fair to say that the new Patriots administration is learning why the old Patriots administration was not very open with the press about stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I think they've said a lot of things generally I like, but I also think they've said a lot of things that will very quickly get taken out of context.
And Belichick knew that just as well as anyone, right? The fact that, you know, it's a situation that as soon as you say something to the media is going to respond, and the media is going to make something out of nothing, even if there's nothing really going on, the media is going to make something out of it. And one of the reasons why he never talked to the media, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah. And, you know, it's ways for things to get misconstrued. And I think, you know, one of the difficulties for the Patriots right now is that they exist within the Boston sports ecosystem. And the biggest kind of overarching storyline in Boston sports media right now is what's going on with the Boston Red Sox and how the owners, you know, came out with all this bluster, said they were going to make moves, did all these changes, and then
didn't actually do anything
after a long history of not wanting to keep their own players, not spending on guys. Right. And football is a very different sport. Football is hard capped in a way that baseball isn't when it comes to your spending. The way free agency looks in both of these sports, you know, the age at which players reach free agency and the quality of the free agents is very different. But because the Patriots came out and said, you know, we're going to be spending a ton and then didn't spend a ton, they're going to be viewed through this lens now. And I think you have to look at this in kind of two different ways. One, when it comes to actual strategy and on-field product and everything, I think they've made the right moves this offseason. You know, there was only one, like Gerard Mayo was correct today when he said there was basically only one good free agent. We went after him. We didn't land him. They weren't going to wildly overpay like Tennessee did for Calvin Ridley. And once that happens, you know, you kind of close up shop to a degree. But the flip side of this is part of being a head coach is the public relations.
That's correct.
Being the media facing person. And when you go out and, you know, try to impress a whole bunch of new people and make that good impression on the fans by saying, hey, you know, we're going to do this because you guys have really wanted us to do this. And then you don't do it. You're setting yourself up for disappointment with those people. So, you know, a learning experience for those guys. And I'm sure if this administration doesn't end up going well, people are going to point to these moments where they say, we're going to go spend, and then they don't spend, as where it all started, whether or not that's justified.
Right. And old man Mob said, you know, he did sound disappointed when he said they didn't get Calvin Ridley. But, I mean, they could have gotten Calvin Ridley. It just took money. And I know they didn't want to spend it, and that's fine. But, like, you know, you wonder. And I talked about this before, right? And I've been accused many times especially since I didn't absolutely hate and despise the dynasty. I've been accused of being a craft ball washer, as people have said. And I said it on the show before. He doesn't have anyone to hide behind now, right? He always said, "Oh, the checkbook's open. Checkbook's open for Bill Belichick. It's open." And, you know, okay, put your money where your mouth is. Let's see you give Matthew Judon some money. You've been in contact with Christian Barmore. That's good. Give him a contract. Kyle Duggar is still out there. Like, obviously, he's on the transition tag, but, like, pay him. You know what I mean? Like, you got to do these things. If people are going to believe that you're going to really pay the money, you're going to have to do some of these things. And listen, that might mean trading 34 to San Francisco for Brandon Ayuk and giving him a massive contract. And I'm okay with that. I am okay with that.
I just think San Francisco is kind of the issue you've run into there. And yeah, I think not giving $23 million a year to a 29-year-old wide receiver with a questionable track record here, I think, you know, I agree with the front office's decision.
As do I.
The other part here is that because I think the fans view this as a refresh and not a reset. Mm-hmm. Like when you bring in a whole new coaching regime in GM, usually a fan expectation is, all right, these guys get, you know, three, four years to put something together. And I don't think that's the fan expectation here, which I don't think is fair to the guys who were there. But I don't blame Mayo for asking for patience today, because they're at the ground floor of this thing. They need multiple quality drafts of good players on both sides of the ball if they would like to become a contender. We are 2, 3, 4 years away from that point.
Yeah.
I just, you know, we gotta, there's going to be ugly moments in that too. Like, you know, even good teams have ugly moments. This team's not a good team. There's going to be some real ugly moments, even if this team is better next year than it was this past year. And I think setting expectations way too high for no reason, because you're just trying to impress a press outlet in Boston that will always be negative on you no matter what you do.
That is correct.
Is not setting yourself up for success in the public eye.
Yes, that is correct. If you spend too much money, they'll rip you for it. If you don't spend enough money, they'll rip you for it. If you sign the right guys, they'll rip you for it. If you sign the wrong guys, they'll rip you for it. If you draft the right guys, they'll rip you for it. If you draft the wrong guys, they'll rip you for it. It doesn't matter what you do.
If you go 14-2, they'll question, oh, but, you know, the two losses are, you know, you didn't win the right way. You know, is it going to translate in the playoffs? Like, and standards here are high because, you know, we've raised that bar because this team has been so successful. Like, I get it. But, if the bar doesn't come down to some degree, then it's going to be hard to find any coach successful. that much.
Well, and that's really what it comes down to, is that you just got to be real, just be a little bit more realistic about the Patriots' chances this year. They're not competing this year. They're not. They're going to be a bad team again. They're going to be drafting in the top 10 again, for sure. Now, will it be the top 5 again? I don't know, but it will be the top 10 again, unless something crazy happens. So, you know, we need to temper expectations. At the same time, I do understand people are like, well, we have all of this money. We have an insane amount of money, which we do. The Patriots have a ridiculous amount of money. And so you look at it and say, okay, well, we need to go out and get guys. And the problem is that those guys aren't available, right? They were going to pay for Michael Pittman. They were going to pay for T. Higgins. They were going to pay for, you know, those guys.
Mike Evans. Apparently, Mike, they were going to be gearing up to offer him.
So that's the thing is, you know, that's one of those things, right? And it, you know, it's tough. It is what it is. And here's the thing, right? And so here's Roberto. I'll just throw Roberto on the screen right here, because he says, you know, get ready to be mediocre.
Throw him in the years.
And here's what I'll say, okay? Here's what I'll say is that I get it. I do. I understand people's expectations. Here's what I'll ask you, okay? Would you be the Dallas Cowboys? Would you accept being the Dallas Cowboys, who were dominant in the 90s and then just have kind of floated here and there and are good but not great,
yeah,
compete every year but choke in the playoffs? Like, would you be okay with that, or would you be upset with that?
Well, and I think the answer to that for me is you're going to be excited at first until it sets in, because that's the way these things go. You know, your expectations change with time. My expectation right now, get this team to 500 within like 4 years, like just get to that point consistently. I don't mean like, oh, like once go over 500. I mean, all right, let's be, you know, above 500 consecutive seasons
here. Yeah.
And get to that point. And then once you get there, it's about taking that next step.
Yep. By the way,
players.
By the way, DJ has the correct answer. DJ has the correct answer. You're okay with it. You're 100% okay with it, because if you're in the playoffs every year and you're competing every year, you're there. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to win. It may you'll never win ever again. Who knows? But you're competing every year and you're knocking on the door. Now, if you can't find the right guys, and Dallas has been slow to move, I would say, off of their quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't move off of Romo fast enough, in my opinion. Dak, you know, if you want to move on from Dak, you need to do that. And well, so
they have an opportunity,
you know,
after this year.
They do. And so they may have to rebuild a little bit through him. But, you know, but either way, that's kind of what I'm looking at, is like, it's foolish to think you're going to end up being the Chiefs again in 5 years. That's stupid. But if you can get to a place where you're competitive and you can be competitive, and, you know, a few people said it here, like, you got to get non-elite, said it, you got to get through the draft. You have to do it through the draft, because guys aren't available in free agency. Now, they're available via trade. If you want to make a trade, they're available via trade, right? Let's just say that you have a good draft this year. You stick at three and draft Drake May, and Drake May is the guy. Great. You draft, you know, someone at 34, Malachi Corley, who had an awesome day at his pro day today, or, you know, whomever else at 34, right? And you're like, okay, fine, here we go. Great, whatever. Next year, you're in the top 10 again. You draft like an elite defensive player or something who really helps you out. The year after that, you're drafting around like 19 or something. Then you trade 19 for a first for that true, legit number one wide receiver. It's what the Dolphins did. Mm-hmm. They drafted Tua. The next year, they drafted Jalen Waddle. The next year, they traded their first-round pick for Tyreek Hill, right? It's what the Eagles did, where they drafted Jalen Hurts. Then they drafted Devonta Smith. Then they traded their first-round pick mm-hmm. for A.J. Brown. So it's like, so all of these things, this is where, that's the path. Like, the path is, you're going to have to give up a first-round pick to get one of those guys. But again, you're not trading three for one of those guys, right? But if you're that mid-first-round pick, you can now, you've started that rebuild, and that can put you over the hump. Now, it hasn't worked in either of those places, although the Eagles did make the Super Bowl. They lost, of course, but the Eagles did make the Super Bowl. But, you know, it gets you to a position where you go from a good team to a very good team from that one move, and that move makes sense.
I think it's also, you know, that's one way to do it. The other way, you look at the 49ers, who've been in the Super Bowl,
yep,
just in it. They got two of the better receivers in the NFL. Ayuk is a true number one, and Debo is, you know, depending on how you view him, a mid-tier wide receiver one all the way down to a really, really high-end wide receiver two, depending on how you view his skill set.
Yeah.
They got both of those guys in the draft. Neither one of them took a first-round pick to get, I don't think.
Ayuk was a late first-round
pick. Was he late first? Okay, yeah. But they're both in that late first, early second window, you know, and that's where, yeah, that's where Justin Jefferson came from. Mm-hmm. He also came from that window. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of ways to do this. And I think they can roll over cap space. So you can roll over cap space in the next year. And, you know, let's say you can't get a trade for Ayuk or Debo Samuel if he ends up on the market instead. Yeah. You can't make it happen this year, and Justin Jefferson doesn't hit the market or whatever. Well, let's say a wide receiver hits the market next year. And let's say, more importantly, let's say a wide receiver hits the market who has a big contract and a team can't mm-hmm. afford it. Mm-hmm. Well, now you can afford that. And, you know, you can do what the Browns did when they got Amari Cooper, where they sent a fifth-round pick for him because Dallas couldn't afford him anymore.
Right.
If you can pull off a move like that and you have all the salary cap room to absorb that, you know, that's another way to get there. So I think I'm glad that they're keeping themselves flexible for the future. You look at this free agent market, you know, they had $100 million. There weren't $100 million worth of guys that were worth signing for this team. That's just, so I'm not mad at it. What I will say though, because I know I've been very nice to the front office here, I do have some criticisms. And this is something that Mike Reese talked about in his column yesterday, his Sunday notes. He talked about how it seems like they're shifting away from building around special teams. You know, Matthew Slater retiring. We assume Brendan Schooler will fill that role, but who's filling the Brendan Schooler role? Adrian Phillips cut. Chris Board cut. Miles Bryant, who's a big special teamer for them, as well as a defensive player, not signed. He's in Houston now, which I'll talk about the defensive implications there in a sec too. But the NFL is looking at making the kickoff a bigger part of the game. Like, they want to bring the kick return back. It hasn't been voted through yet. It sounds like it might still get voted through for this season. And I don't know how I feel about that. I think it's a bold decision to shift away from special teams the second that it becomes a bigger part of the game, especially when we've seen this team lose because of special teams, like, multiple times in the recent past. I mean, they missed, for all of the awful Matt Patricia stuff, in large part, they missed the playoffs that year in large part because of special teams not executing in Buffalo. Like, that was a huge thing. To go along with that, you know, it's still just Chad Ryland on the roster. There's kickers out there. They haven't signed anybody, and I get a lot of offseason left. You know, they're not in a rush to do it, but that situation hasn't gotten talked about at all. So I really am unsure about the way they're going, because I know there's been a lot of, you know, the talk radio types who have poo-pooed their investment in special teams over the years for a long time. And if they're just reacting to that and saying, we're going to spend less money there, we're going to invest less there, I don't like that process, that you're taking that input from what the fans are saying on something like that. And I don't love the overall strategy of becoming less invested in something as it may become more important.
And you're not wrong. I will say, though, Matt makes a good point that – not you, Matt. This Matt, Matt makes a good point that you know, the special teams sucked the last 2 years. And that was with those guys.
But they
I know Chris Board was 1 year, right? And but, you know, but the idea is that the special teams hasn't been good. And so
– no, it hasn't.
Those guys aren't the reason that you're going to do well on special teams, in my opinion, right? And so you can bring in some guys to replace them. I do think Miles Bryant, you mentioned Miles Bryant, and, you know I hate Miles Bryant, but I don't. And this is the thing. I really started to gain some respect for Miles Bryant, certainly over the last year. And I think the reason for that is because they were playing him out of position, and it wasn't fair to him to be in the role that he was in, because he can't do that. If you want to have him as a depth slot corner, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. He's not great, but he's pretty good. He's smart. He doesn't make stupid mental mistakes. Yeah. Now, he's not good enough to cover a lot of guys. They put him one-on-one on who the hell's the fast wide receiver that played in Buffalo, who's not there anymore,
who absolutely
torched them, Isaiah McKenzie. Isaiah McKenzie just absolutely torched him all. He can't do that. He can't cover that guy one-on-one, right? This is not possible. And so they put him in an impossible situation right there, and he didn't hold up. And so he looks terrible. But in actuality, he's a good player. And so I liked having him as a depth piece. Now, he's a depth guy. So, like, maybe he didn't want to come back. Maybe he wanted to change the scenery. Maybe the Patriots were like, hey, look, we have some depth guys that we like here. We're good to go. Like, you know, I don't know. But he's a better player than certainly I first thought. And I think that a lot of people think because of that. And so, you know, it's one of those things for me that I look at it and say, okay, you know, let's see what can happen over there. And of course you have Marcus Jones, who I love. And, you know, you do have Isaiah Bolden, who, you know, was hurt all of the year this year. Now, he obviously is a very different player than Brian, but still, you have guys that are depth pieces, and Alex Austin, who played well last year. So I think they saw enough from the young guys that they feel like they're okay at the corner position, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on.
Well, and depth at the corner was a big issue for them last year. And right. Miles Bryant being able to give them something pretty consistently over the middle of the field as a defender was why they were able to stay competitive in some of those games.
Yeah, that's true.
And like, I don't know, he's never going to be more than your third best defensive back or corner on the field. Like, he's just not that kind of guy.
Right.
But he's also, I'm assuming, we don't have numbers yet. He's also not going to get paid more than that. He is a role player. And for not that much money to get a guy who can be your corner four, who can be also kind of be your third safety in that, who can play in that role, can also play a ton for you on special teams, raises the floor of your defense, is a good communicator, and helps the guys around him, especially if you're bringing in young players. I'm not sure why we're in a rush to get rid of that. And it sounds like they were interested in bringing him back, but not that interested. And it seems
strange.
And it's
won't tell me you're interested. Like, if they say something like we're interested in bringing him back, the contract's gonna be nothing. It's not like he got paid in Houston.
Well, if you're overpaying for Miles Bryant, we're talking probably hundreds of thousands of dollars, not millions of dollars.
Yes.
So, that's an area where I don't mind overpaying a tiny bit to get a guy who's a good leader in the locker room.
You know he's a good player. You know he's a good leader. You know he's a decent depth guy. Again, we're not breaking the bank for this guy. He's not starting for you. But he's a quality depth piece for you. And if you know what you have in him versus drafting some guy in the fifth round who knows what that's, those are the things for me that, I don't know. And again, and not only saying they want more speed at corner, I've seen a few people say JC Jackson, but like, I just don't see JC Jackson happening. Gilmore, I would be on board with that 100%.
Yeah. Because if it's Gilmore outside with Gonzalez across from him, Jonathan Jones in the slot, I like that.
That'd be nice.
And I think the other thing here is it goes to the guy who's right behind you there on that wall. What do they get from Marcus Jones next year? He is he played 2.5 games this season?
Yeah, and he had the same injury that Chris Gonzalez had.
He looked good in that span. He's the kind of guy you draft when you're in a division with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle.
Exactly.
And Garrett Wilson. And, like, I like that. But he's still, we're two seasons in, and he's an undersized guy, and he got hurt, and still question marks. And he could turn into a starter for them this year, and it wouldn't surprise me. And if he's the kind of guy that hangs around as a returner the next two seasons and doesn't get extended, and they let him walk, that's also not really surprising. This can still go a lot of directions. Right. And it seems like, Christian Gonzalez, we like, though he's still unproven. Jonathan Jones is a little bit older, and he's had his injury issues. And after that, there is no floor on this secondary. Jones, still a question mark. Alex Austin, a question mark.
I thought he played well last year, but that was in limited time, small sample size. Like, it's hard to know what you're going to get from him. But I do like the idea of giving him a shot this year.
And this Marco Wilson, he ended up in New England because teams didn't want him. Although he did, he was a popular claim, I believe, on the waiver wire. And Isaiah Bolden, he's day three pick. He didn't look like anything special in the preseason when he played. And
the thing about the thing that excites me about Bolden is that he has the physicality to do it. He's got the physical skills to do it. Now, whether the technique can actually ever catch up and he can actually ever do it, I don't know. But he has the speed and athleticism to be able to do it. So that at least excites you because he's got the size, he's got the length, he's got the speed. Those things he has. And so
should be able to press out there. It seems like it, right?
And so, and again, I don't know if that's ever going to come, if the actual technique of it is ever going to come, but there's a chance at least.
Yeah. Is Sean Wade still around for next year? I think he might be as well.
I think so. Yeah.
Which he improved this past year. He still wasn't anything fantastic, but playable. But like Miles Bryant was better than Sean Wade by quite a margin in my eyes.
Yeah, for sure.
And I just, this seems like a risky move and one where now you feel like you might have to draft a corner at some point, letting Miles Bryant walk for what we think is pennies. And
right.
There's a lot of needs on this team.
But again,
fill that one for cheap for 2 years and draft a corner next year.
I just think, if you're looking at it and saying, and I don't know how much you got paid, but if you're looking at it and saying Christian Gonzalez, maybe they're planning on signing Steph. I don't know. But even if they're not, Christian Gonzalez, Jonathan Jones, Marcus Jones, maybe they're comfortable with Alex Austin right there. And then you got Isaiah Bolden as your fifth. And Sean Wade is in there as your sixth. And you have, so you have some depth guys, and you're going to draft someone, you know, end of day two or day three to try to be a guy that can be a depth guy as well. I think that that's okay. But you know, I don't know. I mean, time will tell, obviously, right? If they go out and sign Stephon Gilmore, I obviously feel very different about it. And there's been some smoke about that perhaps happening. And so, but we'll see. He did not have a 90% completion percentage on him. That's not correct.
Well, and it's the way
maybe that might have been passer rating. That's totally different, though.
Like Miles Bryant defended a lot of guys who were like underneath. So his job was like, yeah, you can give up the completion that's 2 yards and then wrap him up.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's fine.
He
wasn't. He's not an elite corner. He's just like, you know, another Kyle Arrington. Now, he's not a very different athlete than Kyle Arrington.
Of course,
but
yeah.
Similar role on the team.
Right, right. So, all right, let's get into this hip drop is driving me. You tweeted it out like 5 days ago, and it's so perfect that, you know, the NFL is gonna do it because, you know, they're going to change the rules because Warren Sharp doesn't understand football. Like, it's just the hip drop tackle. I don't understand. How are you supposed to tackle? Like, how am I going to, like, if I wrap you up at the waist, how do I bring you down? Do I have to, like, suplex you over my head? Like, I don't understand how I'm supposed to bring you down.
Well, the way the rule is written, and this is one of the issues right off the bat, is they aren't banning the hip drop tackle. They're banning the swivel hip drop tackle, which is a particular variation of it. And, like, there are some plays where I can see what they mean, because there are some plays where it's, like, it's clear with a defender. What they're trying to ban is a defender grabbing the offensive player and then kind of just leaping up and jumping onto his legs to bring him down. And, like, I get why you're trying to ban that, but, I mean, these things happen so fast, and I don't trust that the refs are going to be able to get this right consistently, because we're talking about such a nuanced rule in a game that happens so fast. And, you know, these players aren't trying to do that. They're not trying to hurt other guys.
Right.
And if the players have a hard time doing this in real time, the refs are also going to have a hard time figuring this out in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of this is that we all know the commentators aren't going to have any clue what's going
That's
on.
That's correct.
And you know, what's going to happen is I went back and forth with somebody on Twitter about this earlier today. Like, you know, we're going to get a moment where there's a tackle that's very obviously a clean tackle, but it is from behind. And you're going to get Chris Collinsworth or, you know, Tony Romo or one of those guys like, well, Jim, I don't know about a tackle that's very legal, but because they don't understand what the rule is. Now, everybody who's watching the game is confused.
That drives me crazy. And I'll tell you, like, you know, Greg Thompson, friend of the show, Greg Thompson, who's been on before from Cover One, he tweeted out the blue dress versus the gold dress. And they were like, you know, he's like, this is the NFL refs, like trying to decipher whether what's a hip drop tackle. And, you know, and then the Laurel Yanny thing. I don't know if you guys remember these viral things or whatever. You know, it's all the same thing. Like, you know, after a view, the person was saying Laurel and not Yanny. And so therefore it's a 50-yard penalty. Like, it's impossible. It's impossible to stop these guys. And again, like, how do you know what's a hip drop and what isn't? I guess the swivel, I get it, right? You don't want to, like, gator twist them, I suppose. But, like, did anyone do that? Like, was the Mark Andrews tackle this year? Was that did he swivel him down?
And that's, like, their example, which, like, I kind of see. But, like, they played a video of, like, tackles that fit the definition for this. And you watch the tackles, and, like, half of them did not fit the definition that they gave out. And it's, like,
has no idea.
Here's
the reason why.
Go ahead. Well, no, like, I get the idea. I understand how certain tackling forms can be dangerous. I just feel like we're taking a very, very, very fringe case, and we're going to turn a mountain or a molehill into a mountain here with,
Here's the reason why. Are you ready? All right, buckle up. Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. Here you go. Here it is right here. And this is why the NFL is changing the rule. This is why the NFL has added more fines lately. Remember last year, the last 2 years, guys have gotten fines for putting their head down. I mean, it's the stupidest rules of all time, and they're getting fined $30,000. And here's why. Do you know where those fines go?
It's charity, right?
Yeah, well, kind of. They go to retired players. They go into the fund that pays out retired players.
Okay.
Oh, that's it. So the NFL is trying to give retired players more money, but they won't pay them more money. So they're stealing. They're stealing money from current NFL players to give to retired NFL players. And they're doing it under the guise of player safety, which is even more laughable. And NFL being cheap. It's the NFL, the multi-billion dollar company, being cheap and having their current players pay for their retired players.
Well, there's like no recourse for if you get fined, right? As far as I know, because like some of these fines are like I get it. Like there's some plays where it's like, hey, the refs miss it and it deserves a fine. Right. But you got guys posting clips of the plays that were actually fined, and it's like there's literally just a regular football play. Nothing happened that even comes close to violating the rules. So
right. Yeah, and that's who's the running back from Pittsburgh? Jalen Warren. I just never forget, like, Matt Chatham posted a video, and he was like, Jalen Warren was fined $30,000 for this play.
It was pass blocking, I think. Yeah, right?
And he goes, if you don't know who Jalen Warren is, you're never going to be able to find it. Never.
Yep.
You can watch this a million times, you're never going to be able to find it. Yeah, and it's crazy. And it's like, that's the type of stuff where it's like, unless it's egregious, what are we doing?
Do you know what I think the NFL's real agenda here? I don't think they're being cheap. I think the goal here is to do something the players are going to hate so that when the next CBA comes around, they can be like, oh, yeah, you know, we'll give you that process you wanted to appeal for fines and to get some of this stuff overturned. Right. Just give us the 18th game. Like that's – I feel like that. Maybe I'm getting too conspiracy theorist.
You're not wrong. No, that's involved. That makes quite a lot of sense too.
Yeah. But yeah, the other thing, like with this, somebody mentioned how you're going to tackle Josh Allen. That dude, every time he gets sacked from behind, is going to be like throwing his legs backwards to make 100%. It look like it's 100%. A swivel drop tackle. And at least once they're going to fall for it. And right. Like he's going to get a free first down in the game somewhere. And we're all going to be annoyed on Twitter. Like somebody clip this, bro. 31 minutes into this, clip this because we're going to be bringing this back up in September, October, November because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the other thing is, it's either going to be that or they're just never going to call it. And there's going to be one play where somebody actually does get hurt on it and they're still not going to call it. And we're all going to be sitting here like, well, what was the point of all of this?
Right.
Because with the NFL, there's no, I mean, we remember the pass interference stuff, how they instituted the pass interference challenge. And for like a month, it was good. And then the refs just decided we're not going to overturn this no matter what on challenges. And then for the rest of the year, nothing happened. And they just got rid of the rule.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think too, like one of the things that I do like that they brought in, which is nice, is that the booth can review some plays, right? Mm-hmm. Some plays, which is nice, right? Intentional ground and they can review. Roughing the passer, right? Is it that they can review? There's a few things that they can review that's obvious.
Not subjective things.
Right. Which is nice. Parts of this. And that's good to see because some of those things, I look at it and say, okay. And I like the fact that it's coming from the booth because it's like, is it obvious? Yes. Okay. Here's the right call. Bam. We're done. Let's not stop time to do this. Like, is it obvious? Yes, it is. All right. That should have been the call. Or you screwed that call up. You got the call wrong. You called it, you know, intentional grounding. It wasn't. What are we doing?
I agree. And I think, you know, they should expand what's reviewable and cut down on the amount of time that you have to actually do the reviewing. And get more people involved in the process too. Because if we're doing something that's like procedural, like, you know, an exact yard line for something, we're not looking at like a first down, but just like, you know, just double checking something or doing a clock thing or something like that. Like, that's the kind of thing where you can get somebody in a booth in New York who works for the NFL to look at it, take 15 seconds, look at it and be like, hey, here's where it is.
Why can the NHL do it and the NFL can't? I don't understand why the NHL do it and the NFL can't. It doesn't make any sense.
How many times, and part of this is with March Madness happening now and all of the reviews that you get in college basketball has ticked me off with this too. But it's like, how can we as fans see something super clearly on the first or second replay of this show on TV, and then it takes 2.5 more minutes before the official makes a call and announces it. Let's hurry it up. And if it takes you 2.5 minutes to first of all, some of these should not take you 2.5 minutes.
Correct. Yeah.
But if it does, it's not obvious and you shouldn't be overturning it. It should be that simple. And this is another thing where having people in a booth can help. If you got somebody upstairs who's watching the game, you don't even, sometimes you might not even really have to stop play that much. You can, you know, you can do it within the flow of the game to review right. these things, like they've done with reviewing every single scoring play.
Yeah.
Which you don't even really notice now, unless it's the ones where you knew it was going to be close anyway.
Well, and that's the other part of it, is that it doesn't matter. The refs on the field don't have to make any decisions at all. They don't have to make one decision. Have the guys in the booth make decision. And DJ Daniel says it might be the ref union, and it certainly might be the referee union. But like,
I don't get that because this is an opportunity for more refs. We can get an extra ref right. in every game and have it be somebody upstairs. Like yeah, that should be a good thing for everybody involved. And it's extra insulation in the public eye for these guys, because there's less right. pressure on getting it. And it's, you know, this is what I think about is like, you go back to the Pats Chiefs game in 2019 with N'Keal Harry stepping out in that whole thing, something like that, which CBS cuts to the first replay and we all see what happened. There should just be an easy recourse to be like, hey, you know, we all saw what happened. We're gonna.
Wasn't that a situation though where the Patriots had no timeouts and so they couldn't challenge it, or they were out of challenges? I think the Patriots challenge it.
They were out of challenges. But what I'm saying is, for something like that, it shouldn't come down to a challenge.
No,
when
I get
it's
you.
That clear and obvious, have a guy who's watching it and who sees the feed and who goes, "Oh, we're gonna change this real quick," or
everybody
I get who's watching. Yeah, and everybody who's watching March Madness Friday night saw that block that was ruled a foul Thursday night or whenever that was, and it's like. I feel like sports in general would be way better for the officials and for the fans if there were somebody who was watching like the TV feed or whatever, who saw what the fans are seeing and could help make a couple calls or, you know.
Right. And it's
this isn't going to be more than a once a week thing either.
Right. And to your point, it's not the subjective ones. It's not the, well, he hit him, but it wasn't serious contact. Just no. It's he didn't even touch him. You called the foul or you called the penalty, and it never happened. It wasn't there. Like, so let's fix it, right? Now, you can make an argument that there's, you know, I don't want someone in the booth saying, well, yeah, but did he kind of touch them? Did he not touch him? I don't, you know, he got him, but did it really affect him? I don't want that. I don't want to deal with that, right? Like, if he hit him, he hit him. You want to call it, they call it, fine. But, you know, if the guy didn't get touched, what are we talking about? You know, so those are the things that I think that we can kind of go from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's like, go to the Saints Rams NFC Championship game and the pass interference that wasn't called. Yep. That's one of those things. It's like, hey, somebody can be like, hey, this is, you know, pretty obvious. We're going to, you call down to the head ref. This is one we're going to intervene on. We're going to throw a flag here. And then, and this is, I mean, we're talking about calls from 2018 and 2019 right now. That's how infrequent these things actually happen in games. I don't think most people are only going to notice this when it's a good thing. And I think it's the DJ in the chat is saying refs might not like it because they lose authority. And I understand that. But I also think refs might like it because it means they're less they get a little more margin for error.
Yep.
They can make a mistake and it won't cost the game because there's some kind of a safety blanket there. And
I'll tell you what, I think they would be a lot more amenable to it if we got rid of the pool reporters and they had to actually address the media. And I don't think that will ever happen, but if they had to actually get up and address the media after a game, the head ref had to go out and address the media, they'd be okay with it.
Well, and this this is also the hard thing with it, is that obviously I like that idea, but also if you have refs who go in front of the press and can't defend their calls, then the second that ref gets assigned to your team, you're throwing a fit over the fact that it happened.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know.
No, I agree.
It's a tough situation. No. I think it's unfair to the refs to put them in a position where they actually have a worse view of what's going on than almost every single person who watches the game, because everybody else gets it on TV.
Right. I agree. All right. Yeah. Let's take a break and we'll get into what's
do
that?
Damian Harris? Do we want to talk in that real quick here?
Damian Harris retired. I like Damian Harris. Good player. But like
– He had a neck injury last year, so I'm assuming that's...
Yeah, I would think that that has something to do with it, right? He doesn't want to mess with things. You know, might be an injury, might not necessarily be an injury. He might be cleared medically to play and just said, nah, I'm not messing with it. I'm all set. You know, I don't know. But, you know, yeah, good for him, good player. But I mean,
he was a win in Buffalo in 2021, so.
Yes, which was nice, right? And but he was drafted in, was he drafted in 2020 by the Patriots? Or 2019? I think he was 2019.
He must have been 2019.
I think he was a third round pick in 2019, I think.
Yeah.
Because right. Was Mondre drafted in 2020?
Mondre was 2020, yeah.
2020. And I think Harris was 2019.
Or was Mondre 21? Now I'm getting myself all messed up.
Yep, 19 third round. I knew someone in the chat, two people in the chat, Matt, Manito, and Thad helping us out. Appreciate you. And Mondre was
21. Mondre was 21, fourth round 2021. Yep. Yeah, okay. 2 years apart. Hey, they're probably, well, I'd say they're due for drafting another running back. I think we know that anyway, especially with the last two guys they drafted not working out.
Quite true. All right, so let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about my draft, my mock draft, which came out today on Pat's Pulpit, and we'll also discuss some listener mocks that we had submitted as well. Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Now, Prize Picks even offers injury insurance so your entries stay in play, even if one of your players gets injured. For basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, that player projection won't count against you and the rest of your entry stays live. Now this week for me, I have Steph Curry for more than 29 points and Nikola Jokic for more than 10 rebounds. And then Caitlin Clark for more than 30 points and LeBron James for more than 7 assists. So download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. All right, so Old Man Mob's asking about whether the Patriots will trade Ramondre Stevenson or not. I cannot believe that they would trade Mondre. I suppose you never know, but I'd be shocked if they did that. He's literally their best offensive player, so I can't imagine that they would trade him.
Yeah,
I know
they might not resign him, but I don't think they're going to trade him.
And that's the thing. I know he's up after the next year, but like you're not going to get a lot for him either. So it's not like, you know, if you were getting a early second round pick or something like that, that'd be a different story. You're not. You're going to get like a fifth round pick back for Ramondre. It's not worth it.
He's one of those guys who, like, if he has a really good season and you're at the trade deadline, there's a playoff team that lost their running back and somebody's going to give you like a third for him for half a season. Yeah. Right. Well, at least I'm thinking about that.
Correct.
But I don't think his stock would get that high. And
agreed.
But the money they have, I think I would rather just re-sign him after too.
Yep. Not only hooking us up with a little thumbs up. Appreciate that. Thank you. Give the channel a thumbs up. Space Cadet asked about Judon. No chance. Matthew Judon has talked about being a Patriot, is the consummate Patriot, continuously trying to get people over here to New England. Like, you know, he's a Patriot. They're keeping him here. So that's the way it goes. All right. You want to get into let's do the listener mocks first, and then we'll go through my mock. What do you think about that?
Let's do it. Which one do we you got any preferences here on what we're
gonna start
with?
It doesn't matter, whichever one you want.
Now we'll go from the top here. We didn't get all of them included in this one. We're gonna have a couple from this that I think we're gonna have next week. Well, I'll start with the first one here from Thaddeus Skywalker. Thad has one in every single week. I don't think anybody's
sure does.
Yeah, his numbers are up there. This one from Thad, he has Drake May at pick 3, a trade back in the second round with Keon Coleman being taken at pick 37, offensive tackle Patrick Paul at pick 68, cornerback DJ James from Auburn at 103, safety Dadrian Taylor-Demerson from Texas Tech at 114, Theo Johnson at 137, Ray Davis, the running back at 153, and Ladarius Henderson from the Michigan offensive line at 180. What do you think, Pat?
I mean, I like it. You know, it's pretty good. Keon Coleman, I like him at 37 a heck of a lot better than people are talking about in the 20s or, you know, in the teens or whatever. So I like Keon Coleman. I'm worried about his separation numbers. I worry about that. very good contested catch guy, monster at times at Florida State, but I worry about the separation numbers. I am sold. I'm sold on Drake May at three. I think it makes sense. I think he might be the quarterback of the future, and if that's the case, taking him at three makes a ton of sense. I like Patrick Paul a lot too. And so, you know, you draft a corner in DJ James, you draft a safety, you draft a tight end, you draft a running back, and then you draft an offensive lineman. I like it. So,
Yeah, good. And I got to watch that safety. I haven't checked him out. Obviously, with Jonathan Jones, they've had good luck with the Auburn corners. So
yep.
I haven't gotten into his tape either. I haven't gotten into much defensive tape this cycle yet. But yeah, I love the positions there.
Yep, agreed.
Next up, Gavin Gardner sending us one. We got a couple trades in this one. Patriots trade with the Vikings back to 11. And they are going to get Olufashanu at 11. Which I think would be awesome. They also pick up 23 and a couple other picks, future first, future fifth, I think, in that trade. Then they're going to trade back again from 23 back to 27, get A.D. Mitchell at 27, Michael Penix at 34, Max Melton, the corner from Rutgers at 80, Trey Benson, the running back from Florida State at 103, Theo Johnson, a favorite in here, 121, Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa. At 137, Roger Rosengarten, the tackle at 145, Nehemiah Pritchett, the corner at, I think that's 162, Jordan Jefferson, the defensive lineman at 180, and CJ Hansen, the guard from Holy Cross at 214.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I love, you know, Olu's a beast. I don't know if A.D. Mitchell's going to be there at 27, but I like the idea of moving back down again, picking up some extra assets. Penix, I had in one of my drafts. I love him. I'm a big fan of him. I worry so much about his knee. And I also worry about not only his knee, but also the ability to, you know, throw the ball over the middle of the field and read everything else, you know. But I do like him. I don't know
how at 34, I feel good about that.
I agree with you. I agree. Yeah. And I like the rest of the draft too. I mean, Trey Benson, I think, makes a ton of sense. There's some injury question marks about him too, but if you're comfortable with the medicals, he's a heck of a running back.
Yep. I like Christian Boyd here, who's a guy they've been tied to as well. Yeah. I think I could see doing him liking him. He was good at the Senior Bowl. I think with the Senior Bowl at Roger Rosengarten is a right tackle who seemed like a guy who could be a really high quality swing tackle for you, and I like that, especially because, you know, obviously, we're excited that Michael Onwenu is going to be your right tackle full time. But in a world, you know, if injuries happen or whatever, if you got a quality tackle backup, that allows you to shift him back inside if needed. You know, it allows you to take advantage of his versatility. And we all know they need more depth at tackle. So getting two tackles, the high upside Fashanu and the high floor Rosengarten, I really like that pairing.
Yeah, I like it too. And look, you know, not only to saying that Theo's only good at testing and his production was terrible and he's super slow at turning and all that stuff. That's 100% true. And I agree with you. But tight end is a position that's filled with guys who did nothing in college and developed into something in the pros. The tight end position is filled with guys like that. And so, you know, you're taking them in what, the fourth, fifth round in this mock? Like, I'm okay with taking a flyer in the fourth or fifth round on a guy that has, you know, elite athleticism, even if the production isn't there, even if he's not a good tight end right now, we can develop into one.
Yeah, and it's – you look at the way tight ends develop in the NFL, like it's a – could be a 2-4 year development curve before these guys become starters. So I think Theo Johnson is a guy who you're drafting him hoping that in 2026 he's – one of your starters. That's correct. The idea there. And it's something about tight end. These guys, they just take longer to develop pretty much across the board, with a couple notable recent exceptions. I think Sam Laporta is a guy who really stands out there, Dalton Kincaid, but those are also guys who are primarily,
even
tight ends.
Yeah. Even Pitts, and Pitts has gotten chat on, but like he had 1,000 yards this rookie year. So like, and you know, he's a good receiver. He's just, he dealt with injuries, and that offense is terrible. So, all right, what do we got? What's up next?
This one is from Andrew Campanella. He also does a trade back here with Minnesota and a second trade back with the Raiders. So the first pick here is at 13. Patriots take Troy Fontenot, tackle from Washington. Another A.D. Mitchell, this time at 29, with another trade back in there. Tackle Karan Amagaji at 59. Michael Penix at 61 in this mock. 61. Tavondre Sweat, defensive tackle from Texas at 68. Jacob Cowing, receiver from Arizona at 103. Cam Hart, the corner from Notre Dame at 109, I think that is, 108. Isaac Garendo, halfback from Louisville at 137. Tip Raymond, tight end from Illinois at 180. Frank Gore Jr., the halfback. You know he played halfback from Southern Miss. They are in the sixth round. And Jalen Green, edge defender from James Madison in the seventh. I'm going to confess, I have nothing I can give you on Jalen Green. I do not know who that is. But the rest of this draft
I
like.
Well, you know what's interesting? I can give you something on Jalen Green. I'm going to save that for later, though. That's what we call a big market tease. I'm going to save that for later. But I like that pick. I like this draft. You know, there's a lot of good players in the draft. I think Penix being there at 60 is wild, but it could happen. I think Sweat being there that late is nutso. I think there's a 0% chance that happens, but I guess you never know. But he is an absolute monster. If he's not gone by the end of the second round, I don't know anything about anything. Like, it's just, what are you doing? You know, you got to draft that guy. So, and he's a guy that, like, if I were the Patriots and he's sitting and you're in the 50s and he still was on the board, I would take 68 and package it with something and go get him, because he's that good that, like, you put him next to a guy like Christian Barmore and, oh my God, you know? So it's interesting. Now, the Penix thing is interesting because not only saying they don't like Penix, and he's right. Mayo said there were five quarterbacks. Now, he didn't say who the five quarterbacks were, but he said there were five quarterbacks. And they haven't been linked to Penix. They haven't met with Penix. None of that. You go back and forth. Here's the thing. Is it a smokescreen? Do they really like Penix and they're just trying to get people off the scent? I don't know. Like, right now is silly season. Like, there's certainly a chance that the Patriots are in on Michael Penix and they just don't want to tell anyone that that's the case. You know, that they're hoping if they make that trade with, you know, Minnesota to do 11 and 23, that they can draft Michael Penix at 23. I don't know, but, like, I think that there's a chance that that's what they want to have happen, and they don't want anything linking them to Michael Penix at all.
Well, they also, you know, they got ties to Washington now with Tyler Hughes being there. And they may feel like they can get a lot of good intel from him. And, you know, they could still do a pre-draft meeting with Penix. They can bring him in to Foxborough if they want. You know, they can meet with him still if they'd like to. So, I also, you know, with his injuries, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy who's also totally off their board. You know, he's going to be off team boards this year because of the injuries. And that wouldn't shock me. Also, while we're talking about, you know, where the QBs are ranked at the top, I thought it was interesting. Derek Klassen, who evaluates QBs. Mm-hmm. I had just come on here last Thursday and said I'm not at all interested in Spencer Rattler. He said, based on the tape, he thinks Spencer Rattler is his QB5 in this draft.
Look at that.
So, you know, that's something he's smarter than I am. So I might have to go back and take a look at this and reevaluate some of it. But interesting. The other note on this before we get to the next one, there's a lot of smoke around JJ McCarthy at 2 now. I don't buy it. I think it's people just making stuff up, but it's interesting at least.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. So the draft starts at 2. I mean, obviously we know who's going number 1. Right now, and no one has any idea what Washington's doing at 2, and then what Washington does at 2 is going to impact what the Patriots do at 3. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
And we did see, you know, the team that picks, 2, 3, 4, and 5 all come out in the last week talking about how they're open for business for trades. So, I haven't seen it quite like that before. It seems like teams are lining up to say, hey, Minnesota, we'll take your draft picks.
Yeah.
All right, one more here. This is from Ollie Dyer. He says, longtime listener from across the pond, wanted to send in a mock for us to critique/laugh at. I don't think there's going to be too much laughing with this one, but we'll see how Pat takes it. We got a trade back to start with the Giants. The Patriots are on the clock at 6th overall. They take Joe Alt there, tackle from Notre Dame. In the second, you add Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. By the way, the trade back, you pick up a future first and a 6th rounder in it.
Okay.
Third round, Max Melton, the corner from Rutgers. Fourth, it's podcast hero, Ben Sinnott, tight end from Kansas State. A fifth round, Luke McCaffrey, wide receiver from Rice. His comment says, double dip at receiver, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And then sixth and seventh, you got A.J. Barner, Dylan Lauby, Tanner Bordellini, and C.J. Hansen. That's two C.J. Hansens today. I gotta take a look at this guy.
This is just outright pandering. I mean, this guy is just pandering right now. I mean, this is incredible. This is incredible. If the Patriots came away with this draft, like, it'd be unreal, right? You're drafting who I've said on here, the safest player in the entire draft, in Joe Walden, number six, and getting a future first-round pick next year. You're drafting Leggett in the second round, who I think is a beast. Max Melton's a very good corner in the third round. Then you're drafting Ben Sinnott. I mean, we love Ben Sinnott. Everyone knows that. Then you get Luke McCaffrey and Dylan Lauby as well, and Tanner Bordellini. Are you kidding me? He wins the draft of the week.
This draft is just missing Eric All. That's it.
Yeah, true. Very true. Also, there's one more that Wes sent me, my buddy Wes, who we read his on the show last week, and I thought it was funny, so I just read it to you because it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. He called it the who needs playmakers? We want beef mock draft. And no trades. He drafted Drake May at three and then went all defensive and offensive line. Braden Fisk at 34 from Florida State. Just a really good pass rushing interior defensive lineman. Kieran Amajigi from Yale at 68, another tackle. Cedric Fran-Pran, who is an interior offensive lineman from Georgia. Zach Zinter, who's an interior offensive lineman from Michigan. Tanner Bordellini, who's an interior offensive lineman from Wisconsin. And then an edge from Washington and an offensive tackle from South Dakota State. I love the idea because he's just like, screw it. We're just drafting all big guys. The thing to know about Wes is that he is an offensive line coach. And so, you know, he likes the big guys up front. He has a soft spot for the big guys, you know, but I was like, oh my God, that's so funny. I love it.
you gotta build the foundation. You gotta win on the line of scrimmage. I think most importantly, you can't lose on the line of scrimmage. Yeah. Like,
well, that's what the Lions did, right? The Lions have done that, right? They've drafted a bunch of guys early on both the offensive and defensive line. You know, Penny Sewell, number seven overall. They draft the number one pick. They draft Aiden Hutchinson. Like, you know, you have to be good on the two lines. Now, I don't know if I'd go as far as Wes did and draft all offensive and defensive linemen, but, you know, like, I think it's important to get some guys. So, yeah,
you know, and you want to remake. And I think that's, you know, one of the question marks we have going forward for this team is how do they view their line of scrimmage play going forward? You know, different coaches, they might want to play differently on both sides of the ball. And if that's the case, I won't be surprised if they say, hey, we are just going to overhaul the line. We're going to draft, you know, two tackles, a guard, and a center this year. I don't think that's totally out of the picture.
Agreed. That's the all-Nick team, as DJ Daniel says. All he's drafted a bunch of Knicks. I like it.
Thank you, everybody who sent one in. Yes. What's the email for that, Pat?
So it's Pat's Nation Podcast at – no, that's not my podcast. That's not right. Hold on. Hold, please. Pat's Nation Network at gmail.com. It's all one word, Pat's Nation Network at gmail.com. So I try to respond to everyone. I sign your name too, Matt, even though you don't do any work.
Oh,
well,
you
do the work. I send you the things and then you make it look nice for the show. I actually respond to the emails. But I sign your name on it anyways, as if you're responding. But I speak for the two of us. And so I appreciate you guys sending us in, and you keep doing it because we got all week. And by the way, we're going to get into my mock draft 3.0 right here.
Yeah, let's do it.
How about this? From now until the draft, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are going to get a mock draft on Monday morning every week.
Oh, shit. Am I due for next Monday already?
Yes, you are, baby.
Oh, boy.
We're going. Right. I absolutely love it. So we're going to go. So now until the end of the draft, now until draft day, we're going every Monday. It's going to be great. I'm going to love it. So Matt's going to go this Monday, the Monday after Easter, which would be the first. I'll go the 8th. You'll go the 15th. I'll go the 22nd, and the draft's the 25th. So it'll be great. We'll get some mocks in there, baby. So
I love it.
So, all right. So here we go. So, here's what I had, and we mentioned this before. All right. I'm sold on Drake May. I'm sold on Drake May. The problem that I have is this. You don't know what Washington's doing it to. You just don't know what they're doing it to. And so I looked at it and said, okay, well, what if Washington takes Drake May at 2 and not Jaden Daniels? I'm not sold on Jaden Daniels at 3. Now, the conversation is the conversation, right? You know, you need a quarterback. You don't need a quarterback. What if, you need the right quarterback. I don't think Jaden Daniels is the right quarterback. He certainly might be. I might be wrong. You know, and if the Patriots draft him at 3, I'll do my damnedest to believe that he's the right guy. I don't believe that right now. And so that's what I did as I imagined that. Now, here's what I did. I added a little flavor to it. I sent 3 and 103 to Minnesota. They sent me back 11-23 in their first round pick next year and 2 late 5th round picks. The reason I did that is because the 2 5th round picks come out to a little bit less. You really should be 3 5th round picks. So I sent basically the equivalent of a late 5th round pick to them to kind of put it over, you know, to add a little bit extra value to get that 1st round pick next year. That was kind of my thought there. And so that was the idea. So again, it ended up being 3 and 103 for 11-23, 157, 167 in their 1st round pick next year. So that's what it ended up being. So at 11, I took Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU. Brian Thomas Jr., absolute stud wide receiver. In this mock, it was wide receiver and quarterback heavy. And so the first 3 guys are gone, obviously, right? And Brian Thomas, in my opinion, is right there in that second tier wide receivers. He might be number 1 on that second tier wide receivers. He might not be, but goes to the combine and runs a 4.33 at the combine. You know, and at his size at 6'3", 210, it's pretty impressive, you know.
He reminds me a little bit, and it's a different type of receiver. There's some T. Higgins in his profile, and that he's the number 2 guy behind a guy who's, you know, super explosive and the one that gets all the hype. Who's also, you know, still a very, very good player. So, I like him.
Yeah. So that's what I did at 11. At 23, I took Amarius Mims from Georgia. He's an offensive tackle. He played offensive tackle at Georgia. Now, he didn't play for very long. He started like 9 games in his career, but he's a little bit of an older guy too. All right. But the guy is an absolute freak. He's a freak. His arms are over 36 inches long. His wingspan is 87 inches. 87 inches. It's outrageous. He's 6'8", 340, ran a 5.07 40-yard dash. Broad jump over 9 feet. At 6'8", 340 with a broad jump over 9 feet, that's outrageous. And so, you know, that's one of those things for me that I think Chucks might start the year at left tackle. And Mims may have to learn the position. He might have to get refined a little bit more. When you find an athletic freak at that size, it's awfully hard to pass up a guy like that with those traits. And so I figured late in the round from there. So
on Mims is such a weird prospect here, because do you know how many career snaps he has?
Oh my God, it's not much, because he only started like 8 or 9 games.
803 snaps, that's according to PFF.
It's not great.
Like, it's just, it's a total projection. Like, his tape's very good. He's a freak athlete, just hasn't played a lot of football.
Right.
You know, guys like that can turn into Trent Brown, or they can turn into Trent Brown, you know?
Yeah.
Whichever side of Trent Brown you're getting.
I love that so much. That's so good. That's so good. We got to keep using that. That's so good.
Yeah.
All right. In the second, I traded 34 to Washington for 36 and 100. And so I moved back 2 spots in this mock. Washington, I think, wanted to go up and get like a top flight receiver. They paid number 100. Now, don't forget, we traded 103. So now we have that middle. We're not going from the 3rd to the 5th. We have that 4th-round pick, which is nice. And at 36, I drafted Bo Nix. Oh, God. I don't – listen. I just – I I don't know. I don't know. All right. I'm doing a ton of mock drafts, and I just feel like Bo Nix feels like a Patriots type of quarterback. He has a stronger arm than Mac Jones does. Yeah. He moves in the pocket significantly better than Mac Jones does. If he had gone to Oregon and never played anywhere else and just been in Oregon, right? And that was it. That's the only tape we saw. He'd be a consensus top 10 pick. The problem is that he played at Auburn too, and he was freaking terrible at Auburn.
And so that's the problem.
He's played a ton. He's an older guy. So it's like, what are you getting? Are you getting the Auburn Bo Nix, or are you getting the Oregon Bo Nix? And that's where it becomes dangerous. But if you're drafting at 36, I don't hate it.
I could see him being a scheme fit too. There's a couple things to like there. When he's mobile, you can roll him around. He can throw on the move. He is very consistently accurate with underneath throws and good at setting guys up for yards after the catch. You mentioned his pocket presence, his pressure to sack rate, the second of these guys we're talking about in the draft, only behind Michael Penix. Yep. He is very, very good. Really, he's a big body back there too. So he's hard to bring down. He's elusive. He can make throws on the run. It's just, you know, his physical tools are a whole lot of good, but not great. And he's already older, and since Auburn, he hasn't really been asked to be in an offense where he's reading down the field. Right. So this is a situation where you might be picking a guy whose ceiling is 20th best quarterback in the NFL, like a Baker Mayfield, the ups and downs of Baker Mayfield, like not just the good stuff we've seen. And whose floor, you know, obviously you talk about floors with a quarterback. There is no floor. Any quarterback draft at any point in the league can be out of the league in three seasons.
That's correct.
But I like his floor. I think it's better than most because he's good under pressure and because he can consistently make throws underneath. I don't think he'll totally flame out, but you never know. So I don't hate picking him. I think he'd be a good fit in the offense. I think getting an older guy in there is something they wouldn't hate either, because it should give you, you know, if it translates, he gives you an immediate step up. He would immediately be better than Mac Jones was, I think. Right. But this might be the type of thing where you're going to draft him, and he's your starting quarterback for 2-3 years, and then you're looking for another guy. And it's not because he's bad, but it's because he's all right. He's a backup.
Yeah. No, and you're not wrong. And so Matt Menino, you know, says that it strikes him as curious to think about a Patriots type of player when Belichick's no longer here. And you're not wrong, Matt. Mm-hmm. I think he fits the scheme is what I'm trying to say. AVP has, and not that AVP has a guy that he's looking for, but I just think that, you know, I think that it you know, that's the only thing that I look at. So,
yeah,
you know, we'll see.
And it's, like being able to, he checks all of like the basic boxes. He might never do anything other than the basic stuff.
Correct.
But getting a guy in there who can, I think, if he, again, like I said, if it translates, can immediately raise your floor. And a guy who might be, you know, right away as good as Jacoby Brissett is too. That means your quarterback room has two guys better in it than anybody you had last year. And that's improvement. And it also, I think, if they don't like the quarterback group next year, this allows you to kick the can down the road for 2 years while you figure it out. And have, you know, a playable offense while you figure it out.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. All right, 68, I went Kyrie Jackson out of Oregon. He's a corner. I don't know if a lot of people have heard of him. 6'4", he's a massive dude, 6'4", 198. I don't know if he's going to translate to the exact type of offense the Patriots want to play. I don't know how well he's going to be in a man press defense. He's a bigger guy, but he's not the best at man press. He's all right. He's not the best at man press. I don't know if he's ever going to actually do that well enough to play here, but I liked the idea. I wanted a corner at 68. I had to take someone different than I had already taken before. I liked the idea of taking a guy with the quote unquote traits and the size. And so that's why I went with Kyrie Jackson. Again, he may not be the guy that the Patriots are interested in, but I do like the idea of getting a big, long guy that can, you know, that has decent speed.
He's a really interesting prospect too, because I think he's an older guy, and I think he has think he's bounced around a ton. I think he was at a JUCO at one point, and he was somewhere else, and he transferred to Oregon. And you know, like he's guys like that are super variable in their drafts. Like, I don't know where he's going to go, but you look at the length and you know, in a scheme where he can be your, it's, I don't know, maybe not your Brandon Browner. I don't know if he's that kind of guy, but if Christian Gonzalez is going to be your guy who can consistently lock up number ones, then in theory, Jackson has the tools to be a number two who can be super physical and beat guys up on the other side.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. All right. Pick 100. And this is the reason I traded for pick 100, by the way. Michael Hall Jr. out of Ohio State. By the way, 100 is a compensatory pick that Washington has, and so therefore it's technically a third-round pick. Michael Hall Jr. out of Ohio State is an interior defensive lineman, but he's a pass rusher from the interior of the defense. Just got after the quarterback last year and the year before, I believe. So this is the year before, but he had 11.5% pressure percentage was aligned as a D tackle. That's an 0-4 ITech with a minimum of 100 rushes. Led the Big Ten. So that's the type of thing where I'm like, whoa, like this dude, he can get after the quarterback. And so, you know, that's to me where it's like you have Barmore and you have Keon White, and now you have another guy that can rush from inside. That's scary. And so that's why I like him here. I think 68 was a little too early for him. 100 to 103, I think, is the right spot for him. So I'm a fan of Michael Hall Jr. That, you know, that late third, early fourth round.
Yeah, I think he'd be a stud there. I love this pick.
Yeah. So 137, I went Luke McCaffrey, who we already talked about on someone else's mock. But again, take it, double dip at wide receiver. You need it. You need it. Their wide receiver room is a disaster right now, so you need it. 157, I took Jalen Simpson from Auburn. Now, Jalen Simpson is a guy that was a corner that's making the transition to safety. He did not make the transition to safety already. He was a corner at Auburn, but he's making the transition to safety right now. They've liked what he's done in some of the bowls that they saw. And so, you know, I think that they – oh, no, that's not true. I think he made the transition to safety last year. I don't know. No, he played corner in college. I was right about that. I was reading. Yeah. I was reading the tweet that I posted, and I'm looking at it like, wait a second, because he's saying in the safety class, he's making the transition to safety from corner. But he understands that's his path in, and so I like the speed and athleticism he brings. He's not the biggest guy, but he plays physical for his size, and so I like Jalen Simpson kind of in that fifth round spot.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, you need secondary guys right now, like I said. You need some depth there. They still haven't – they don't have a true replacement for Devin McCourty either. Just getting more bodies in there is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. So next guy, 167, is another position changer. This guy already made the position change, though. Tyrone Tracy from Purdue transferred to Purdue as a wide receiver, played wide receiver for a year. And then went back for his fifth year, and they were like, hey, we need a running back. You want to be running back? And he's like, yeah, okay, sure. Runs for 700 yards and 8 touchdowns as a running back. Obviously a good receiver out of the backfield, clearly. Used to be a wide receiver. But, you know, also the contact balance, the athleticism, the vision. Like, he runs like a running back. He looks like a real running back. And so I like this guy quite a bit. Again, later round pick, but I like – the idea of him playing, you know, that running back wide receiver role, kind of like a Trey Ty Montgomery type player. Yeah. Right. And so
they've shown interest in these guys too. Like you said, Ty Montgomery, Antonio Gibson, this is a prototype. It seems like they have liked recently. Go back to Cordarrelle Patterson. So yeah, I would not be shocked at all. I think it would be interesting to have two of these guys on the roster at once, but I don't hate it. Not mad at it.
Yep. That would agree. All right. And then round six, I got two picks left here. Round six at 180, I drafted Hunter Norzad from Penn State. Now, Hunter Norzad, the guy he can't do anything, unfortunately. He is very limited. He never played right guard at Penn State, which is upsetting. Never played right guard. He did, however, play left tackle, right tackle, left guard, and center at Penn State. He played literally everywhere except right guard. And so he's made the transition all over the field. He's a center now. He played well at center last year. And I think that he's the guy for me that, you know, you want that Swiss Army knife type guy to be your interior offensive lineman, back up to a ton of different positions. He's not going to play tackle in the NFL. But for him, I think center or guard, that's an interesting situation for me. So I like the idea of Hunter Norzad. Again, late round, you know, he's in the sixth round, but I like the idea of him there.
Yeah, I like that. And especially day three, just grab an interior offensive lineman. That's good value to, you know, just keep taking those guys until you get some starters or high quality backups out of it. And yep. We all know they need the depth there right now.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And I lied. I have two more picks now. Jalen Green, who was in someone else's mock, James Madison. He's a little bit undersized. He missed the last four games of the season last year. Even after missing the last four games of the season, he finished the season leading FBS in tackles for loss and sacks last year. So he was an absolute monster off of the edge. He's a little bit undersized. But man, he can move off the edge. He's got some really good moves off the edge, and he can really move. And so he's kind of an explosive guy that I like coming off the edge. Again, it's a late round flyer. He went to James Madison. He's a little bit of an older guy because he's a fifth year senior, but like, whatever, take a shot and see what you can get. Even if you only get 1 or 2 years of actual pass rush production, or even, you know, 20 snaps a year or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. If some of those snaps can be productive, it's enough when you're talking about, you know, pick 200 in the draft or whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the time to take that risk.
Exactly. And then the last pick is exactly the same thing. Aneem Dakwa from Howard, 6'8", 353, big enough for you. Maybe the guy's an absolute monster, just absolutely huge. I believe he ran pretty well at the combine as well. And so he's not the most fluid guy. He's not super agile or anything like that, but he's just an absolute monster. And so it's like, well, why not take a shot on a guy that big and just see what happens? See if you can develop him in some sort of way. And again, you're drafting in the 230s here. Like, who cares? You know? So that's my, that's my pick there in the seventh round.
There's not a lot of guys who are 6'8" and who can play tackle. So
that's correct. Yes.
It's I don't hate the idea of just throwing a pick there. I like your mock. I think there's a lot of good stuff there, and it raises the floor on this team significantly for next year if Mims gives you something.
Yes, and that's the idea. You know, and again, right. And so, you know, and my point, and this is what, you know, this is kind of the conversation. And the whole reason we're doing mock drafts is because you have the conversation of players, right? And someone in the chat mentioned that they hadn't heard of Michael Hall before. And they're like, oh, that's good. That's an interesting name, right? And so it's like, you know, you go through and you see some of these guys. Obviously, the day one, day two guys is one thing. But once you get into that day three, and especially then late day three, you know, it's like, who the heck knows who these guys are? And you're like, oh my God, this dude? Like, holy crap. You know, look at the size of him, or look at his movement skills, or whatever the case may be. And so, I think it's interesting to have, you know, to get a look at those guys. And again, that's why I feel very strongly about the fact that I won't take a guy twice in a mock, because I just keep taking data Tanner Bordellini and Ben Sinnott. I would do it. I would absolutely do it.
Yeah. You fall in love with guys.
You know,
Ben Sinnott might be the new Marcus Jones on this show.
Oh, goodness.
He's not at that level, but
I know, but I'm telling you, man, if they draft Tanner Bordellini or Ben Sinnott, whew, I'll tell you, man, That'd be pretty unbelievable. So, but anyways, so that's it. That's my seven round mock. So you can go, you can find that on Pat's Pulpit. I always try to, you know, throw some Twitter stuff on there from them. And I also do a write up on each player and stuff. So, and we're working on with Brian and Bernd, we're working on some player profiles.
My Xavier Legette one is up.
That's right, baby. I saw that. I was like, okay, I like that.
Yeah. I compared his route running to N'Keal Harry at one point. Oh, people in the comments were not happy with that.
Well, you blame them?
Look, I like Xavier Legette, but you watch – watching him round off some of his routes at the top, and the way his feet are looks a lot like what N'Keal Harry used to do. So
it's not ideal. That's certainly not ideal. Does not make me want Xavier again.
But the other thing is just because one guy busts, sometimes the next guy figures it out.
Very true. Good point. That's a good point.
By the way, before we go, we have one other random Patriots note I'll mention.
Oh, it's here.
You see the other announcement they made today? It's very minor.
The captain's patches?
Yeah, there are any captain's patches to the jerseys this year, which it sounds like the players are very excited about this. Kendrick Bourne just put up on, I think, his Instagram or Twitter or something, that a Photoshop of him wearing a captain's patch saying he's coming for it. If the players like it, I'm all for it. I do think the captain's patches are very ugly. I've never liked them.
They are definitely ugly. They are definitely ugly. But, you know, what are you going to do?
I'd rather do like a sticker on the helmet or something. Like, I don't know.
That I would like.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that works better. Because especially like, you know, if it's – you saw the Chiefs jerseys this year because they got a memorial patch all the time. And then, you know, you got Mahomes with his captain's patch. And then I think they have like an anniversary patch this year. And then they have the Super Bowl patch and looking like the Boy Scouts out there.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much. I agree with you. By the way, KB, it's funny you just said that. I just opened up, literally just opened up Twitter, and Mike had like an hour ago tweeted out, Kendrick Bourne wants to be a team captain. He said, big goal of mine, working for it. So, and by the way, he should be a team captain. He should be.
Well, how many do they have? How many can you have?
Oh, unlimited. No, I don't know. I honestly don't know. Six, maybe?
Because it's, you know, Hunter Henry's one, Dietrich Wise, David Andrews, there's somebody else who was one who I'm forgetting. Bentley is one.
Slater?
No, well, Bentley. guys who are on the team, yeah, Bentley.
Oh, guys who are on the team now, I see.
Yeah.
Matt says four returning. That's, Henry, Bentley, Wise, Andrews.
Yeah. Yep. So I wonder, I'm curious who, like, I think I could see Bourne getting one.
I think so.
That I think would make sense. So yeah. Another thing, there was another announcement today. Somebody in the chat mentioned, which is that we are now the official in the Brazilian market.
That's right.
Which, what I will say,
what does that even mean?
I think it has to do with the way the games get promoted. So I think they're going to promote us more heavily there. And but we might end up with a game in Brazil. Like the Eagles are on Friday night opening in Brazil this year. I don't hate it.
Interesting.
But do you know what concerns me about it? Is that if they opt into it next year, if the Patriots lose a home game in back-to-back seasons where they were supposed to have nine so that we have international games, that I wouldn't like.
That's going to be frustrating. Yep.
No. Yeah.
Yep.
I also, I don't know if you saw the sheet for like what regions that every NFL team has, but my favorite team on there, it's the Steelers. I don't know if you saw this. Do you know what region they have? So they have, they're listed under Ireland.
Oh, God. They're
also listed under the UK with an asterisk. And under that, it says only Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland?
Jeez. So they have Northern Ireland and Ireland, but not the rest of the UK. Are the Steelers pushing for like the reunification of Ireland over here? Oh, what's going on?
Lord, what are we talking about? That's insanity. Well, there you go. Steelers trying to fix everyone's problems. I like it.
Mike Tomlin coming out in support of Irish reunification was not something I had on my before bingo card, but maybe happening.
Oh boy. Well, I also have other news as well. The Celtics were up 68-38, which is great. The problem is they lost 120-118, and realistically, they really lost 120. I mean, they scored a bucket with a second left, and so they – to the Hawks, who stink. The Celtics just – I mean, listen, at this point, it doesn't matter. They've already clinched everything, but it's just like – those like are the frustrating nights where you're like, what are we doing? Like, come on. Of course, people are flipping out about it, you know, but still.
Yeah, it's frustrating. We're like, what? 3-4 weeks away from the regular season being done. April 14th is the last game. Yeah, these dudes have senioritis right now. Yeah, I don't really.
Yeah. Just get us to the end. Yeah. Yeah, the Browns have Nigeria. That's pointed out. Yeah. Anyways, it's frustrating.
Yeah, for the Bruins and the Celtics, I feel like for both of these teams, I'm in just let's get to the playoffs mode now.
Well, the Bruins are the same way. The Bruins aren't a good team. I mean, people forget the Bruins aren't a good team. they weren't supposed to be good. They weren't supposed to make the playoffs this year. They're supposed to be bad this year.
And they just got off to a crazy hot start, like, which is now going to ensure that they're in the playoffs.
Right. And so it's like, you know, they still aren't that good, but like, what the hell? You know what I mean? Like, so well, it just, well,
that,
you know.
That's what the Bruins, they're just like, let's get to the playoffs and see what happens. I don't think they're going to win anything, but we didn't think Florida was going to win anything last year, and they went to the cup. So, well, listen, you know what?
The Bruins, were a wagon last year, and they lost in the first round. So, like, you never know. It never
happened. And that was a Panthers team that underperformed and then got to the playoffs and turned it on.
Yep.
You know, maybe the Bruins, you know, they overperformed to start the year, but they're probably underperforming a little bit right now. And
yeah,
you get to playoff atmospheres and energy and a little bit of a breather after the regular season for a minute and the right matchups. You never know what's going to happen. So
yep,
hopefully, and we'll probably, we're probably going to have a Bruins playoff game during the draft like we did last year. If like that's almost guaranteed to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that's okay. I'll be up here with my Bruins jersey while we're.
Yeah, we'll have them both on. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Or the Celtics will be on. It'll be one of them. I can almost.
I would think so. Yeah, I would think so. But, you know, it's okay. So, all right. Well, that does it. That does it for us. Thanks, everyone, for coming out, listening. We appreciate it. The chat, as always, blowing up. We appreciate you guys. We'll be back on Thursday night talking more Patriots. More Patriots, more draft, more Drake May, more Jaden Daniels, more Caleb Williams.
Maybe they do something between now and then.
You never know. But you never know. Yeah. They are at the owners' meetings right now, so it is possible at least. So
you can make a trade. That happens.
Yep. So, anyways, all right. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you Thursday night.